This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
This is the Michael K. Show.
Let's go to Chris in the car.
We need Shesterkin to come out, which I think he will, and shut the door.
You got to give him a break. You got to let him see the puck, and you just can't let Pittsburgh spend time in the zone. And I think they've done a great job on Crosby outside of the first game of the series and taking care of that line. But there's other good players on this team, too. Malkin still has it. You're seeing they're getting some production from Letang on the blue line despite his age. Shesterkin, he's bounced back and won after being pulled twice already this season. You're going to see a lot of what you saw from the Rangers in the second period, like for a complete 60 minutes tonight. You better, because even though it's not impossible, Peter, to come back from 3-1 down, it's kind of hard to imagine them being able to win three straight games if they drop it tonight.
The Michael K. Show.
What has happened to us as a society?
On 98.7 ESPN.
That is right. Peter and Don on the K. Show for a few more minutes till we're joined by the guy, the honcho, Yankee boy number one.
I'm Michael. Sully.
I got to hear Michael this. I want to hear, how was he a Yankee boy?
Oh, well, all I'm saying is that yesterday when Woodward's comments about Yankee Stadium came out, about it being a minor league, I'm sorry, a little league ballpark, All I'm saying is Michael decided to lean fully into it. He didn't play objective journalist. He jumped on Twitter twice today, five hours ago. What a beautiful day for a ball game at a, quote, little league park. And then shortly after that, in a tweet that's been retweeted 812 times and has nearly 9,000 likes.
And that's how we keep score, people.
That's right. He posted a picture from the stadium and wrote, "What a day here at Williamsport."
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. Don, I'm not knocking him. I'm just saying he's leaning in and going full Yankee defender in this case.
And that's fine. So, but just own it.
Gotta own it.
But here's what I will – you got to remind me when he comes on. You remember those conversations about Citi Field, how it was quote-unquote unfair because it was so hard to hit home runs. So if you have a ballpark where it's easy to hit home runs, isn't it also unfair?
It seems equal to me, Don.
Now, I don't believe in fair because both teams play in it. So Citi Field played big. So maybe it's unfair to the hitters, but it plays fair for both teams because it's not like the fences came in when the Mets were up. So it's the same way. It's a ballpark that it's easier to hit home runs. It's not as easy as Citi Field or Great American Ballpark, but it's on the side of being a little easier than a lot of other places. But if it's unfair one way, isn't it unfair another?
By the way, it's actually the opposite. It's not that you don't believe in fair. It's that you believe fair is fair. And if everyone plays there, what are we talking about?
That's the point. And listen, I've heard it described as like a wiffle ball field. Like, it's just easier to hit home runs there. But you can't complain because it's the same dimensions as the old ballpark where Chris Chambliss hit his home run to beat the Royals and where Jeter's home run that was scooped up by Jeffrey Mayer. But both teams can take advantage of it. So that's why Woodward was wrong, but I kind of feel like Yankee fans jumped the whole Little League Park is like, you're being disrespectful to the great Yankee Stadium. Hey, call me Met Boy, call me anti-Yankee. That is not historic Yankee Stadium. It's a completely different building and a completely different place.
You're not wrong, Don.
All right.
You're not wrong.
Again, I have
and that is a part of this whole thing. Yeah, me too. But the thing is, that is what this is about to some extent. Because if it's really just about what he said, who cares? Who cares?
And you Yankee fans who jumping Woodward or complaining were the same people that were red hot that they were too right-handed, not taking advantage of the short porch. Remember? Oh, they're just too right-handed. They need more left-handed bats. And they got upset with Brian Cashman because they said, well, we have spray hitters. We can hit all areas of the ballpark, which, by the way, Torres did the other day, taking advantage of all the dimensions. But, you know, listen, it's a part of the ballpark. It's like the pesky pole in Fenway or even the Green Monster. And I think that's really the only area where it's quote-unquote unfair or Little League-like. It's not like the whole ballpark. Citizens Bank Park, you can fart a ball out of the stadium.
Well, that's not even a thing.
But does that?
Well, that's awesome.
But Andrew, am I being disrespectful to the building and the Phillies that plays to a lot of home runs? I've told you how I think Citizens Bank is one of the best ballparks in baseball. So do you take offense when I say that it plays like a wiffle ball stadium? Or is it just a fact?
No, it's a hitter's park. Objectively, it is
favorable
to hitting.
They used to call Fulton County Stadium the launching pad because of how many home runs were hit relative to the time. It was probably a laughable number now.
Yeah, now.
But that's why I said, what's wrong, like in the tease, what's wrong with our society? Like, everybody's got to get sensitive. Michael, I think, just playing to the room and having some fun. But please, Yankee Stadium was not disrespected by Chris Woodward. I think, if anything, he disrespected Torres and his accomplishment for winning the game. But no, nobody disrespected the Yankees or the ballpark yesterday. Stop it.
It's not that deep. Speaking of which, let's go to Sean in the Bronx. Hey, Sean.
Hi, Sean.
Hey, Peter, Don, how you guys doing?
What's up?
Hi.
Love the show. Love you guys. You guys are the toast of sports radio. Just want to say keep it up.
Thanks.
And, talking about this whole Chris Woodward thing, you guys made every point possible in that he was just having losers lament. You know, he must be frustrated that his team is the worst in the league despite having the high expectations after signing Semien and Seager and those guys. And, the reason why, and I agree, like, you know, Yankees fans, we do find reasons to be petty. We find reasons to say, you know, have a chip on our shoulder because there's just not a lot of reasons to when you're always one of the top teams in the league. But one of the reasons why I feel like we shouldn't be taking him seriously, this is a guy who back in 2020 complained about unwritten rules when Fernando Tatis hit a grand slam when they
great
were
point,
on a 3-0 pitch when they were, you know, up 12-1 or whatever it was. You know, there's a guy who's complaining about that, but that's not even the biggest point. The point is 6 months later, he backtracked and he said, oh, you know, I've come around on it. It's not that big of a deal. I'm actually on board with it. It's part of the game now. So, you know, not to belittle the guy for having an opinion, everybody's entitled to it. But, you know, if Yankees fans who are passionate about his comments and being so angry about it, you should not waste a second on it because you can't take this guy seriously. And that's just my opinion.
Like I said earlier, his punishment should be to manage the Texas Rangers till he gets fired. Because that's what's happening.
Yeah.
You know, he's not Ron Washington. He's not leading that team to a championship. And he's a pimple on the butt of the game. You know, if you want to go that way, as far as like big deal. All right. Like, I mean, I'm sure he's a good guy. He just he misspoke and he was disrespectful, if anything, to Gleyber Torres for the accomplishment. He got beat. Shut up.
Yeah, I think that's the worst part of it. Is it's not so much about the offense to the Yankees. It's just sort of loser talk.
Yeah, I never understood that because related to real life, right? Like the guy that doesn't get the job, or if we lose at our picks or whatever. And you just come up with a bunch of excuses, and you just kind of look lame at the end of the day, right? That's why I say I'd do it again, because I don't want to be the guy to say, oh, my, this happened or that happened. No, own it. I lost. I do it again. Because all you just come across is a whiny guy.
Let's go to Wally in Ronkonkoma. Wally, what's going on?
Hey, Don, Peter, how you doing? You guys
good.
Are doing a great job today without the caster.
He'll
you have my
soon.
Permission to use that as a drop.
Okay.
Okay.
What do you got for us?
I'd like to ask Don about the firing of Coach Trotz today. What is his take?
Well, I got to tell you, it was the buzz of the morning skate today, Peter. I got word as I was in the hotel lobby, and I was around a bunch of NHL people and Ranger guys, and there's just so much speculation of, like, what happened. So nobody knows exactly. But this is kind of how Lou operates. He won three cups in New Jersey with three different head coaches. So he looks at coaches as being disposable. He was in the last year of his contract, so there's speculation that maybe Barry wanted to retire and Lou wanted to give him an extension, and when Barry said no, he fired him. It might have just been where he didn't think he was deserving of an extension because of that they had a lousy year, and he doesn't want to make excuses for COVID and playing so many games on the road to start the season. But I honestly, Peter, it couldn't come at a better time for Barry, because if he wants another job, he'll get one. If Florida gets bounced in the first round, he'll become the Panthers head coach. Nashville, he can go back there. Winnipeg, where he's from, is looking for a head coach. So rather than do it in August and September when all those jobs are gone, Barry's going to land on his feet. The question is, who's the next coach of the Islanders? Because I still think they're a pretty good team. But Lou does things his own way. But the exact reason for it, only Lou knows right now.
Well, speaking of landing on his feet, Michael Kay
has
landed in the booth. Kayster, how are you?
I'm good. You know, it's funny. You're talking about Lamoriello, right? I got to tell you, Donnie, we like Lou. Lou's been very nice to us. He really has. But when you ask a question why you got rid of a guy and you go, I'd rather not say, what? Who gets away with that? Well, who gets away with, I'd rather not say? I'm sorry. This is a team. You have fans. You fired one of the best coaches in hockey. I think you got to tell us why.
But you only have to do something if you feel that, you know, there's going to be consequences if you don't. Lou doesn't care.
Right.
Doesn't care what you think. I mean, you can't find somebody for not giving you a reason. He doesn't care. And all the more reason, Michael, to think that he's protecting Barry. Like, what if Barry said, listen, I just want one more year, and then I'm going to retire. And Lou's thinking, well, I don't want a lame duck coach. I'm going to fire you. You know, maybe he doesn't want the league to know that Barry wants to retire in a couple of years. All the more reason to just keep it quiet. Like, what? I understand we want to know, and I think we deserve to know because he's a heck of a coach and it kind of came out of nowhere. But if he's protecting Barry or he's, you know, protecting a certain situation, he's under no obligation other than feeling guilty to not tell us. And Lou is the last person in the world that's going to feel anything, any slings and arrows, or feel remotely bad that Michael Kay or Don LaGreca demands an explanation for what happened.
Well, I mean, if we're talking literal sense, he has no right. obligation. And because he's Lou Lamoriello and he has all the Stanley Cup championships, he doesn't have to. But out of like deference to your fan base, when a manager or coach is fired, you really should explain it to them out of respect to them. So, yeah, I know he has the power to say bleep you to everybody because I'm Lou Lamoriello. But I think Islander fans deserve an explanation why they're losing a coach of this ilk. And, yeah, he doesn't have to. Who's going to tell? Is Ledecky going to tell Luke Lamoriello, by the way, Lou, you have to? No, nobody has control over Lou Lamoriello.
But also, yeah, maybe Lou's just being that guy, which is always possible. But what if he's trying to protect Barry? Then what would satisfy you is to give a lie for a reason? Like, what if Barry only wants to coach for a couple more years but doesn't want it out there because that might harm him from getting a job someplace else? Or maybe he wants to get bumped up to management but not right away. Like, I understand we deserve an explanation, but maybe he's doing it to protect Barry. Maybe he's doing it to protect something else. And so what is he supposed to do then? Does he just come up with like a bogus reason? Does that make it right too?
No, but I mean, wouldn't you think, Don, that, I mean, Lamoriello is going to be asked by anybody who wants to hire Barry Trotz. You mentioned Florida, whoever that team might be. Don't you think that they're going to ask him? He's going to have to tell them the truth. That Barry Trotz can't keep it under the radar. The reason he left I mean, it's going to get out there. I mean, Lou Lamoriello could have made it easy. Unless the guy, God forbid, if the guy's sick and he's really walking away, then that's fine and he shouldn't say a word. But if it's something that, you know, you want him to be able to get his next job and not tell his next employer that he only wants to coach another year, well, that's wrong too.
Well, I mean, I've heard a lot of things today, Michael, you know, things that are on the record, off the record, that this might be issues that go beyond hockey. You know, so that's why I'm kind of open.
Well, then that's different. Then.
That's why I'm kind of open. But, I don't know what's right or wrong, you know, because everybody's got their theories and everybody knows somebody who knows somebody. You know, so if there's so much on the table, I'm not going to jump Lou because, I mean, Lou kind of goes by the beat of his own drum and he really doesn't care what people think. But he's fundamentally a good guy.
Yes, he is.
And Lou is also someone that will take the slings and arrows to protect somebody he's close to. and he was close to Barry. And on the surface, it doesn't look like Barry did a job where he deserves to get fired. So, yeah, I'd love a reason. And maybe Barry will give it himself at some point. But right now, I think there's so much speculation that I think everything is on the table as Lou just being that guy to Lou as being a really nice guy. So we'll just have to wait and see how it plays out.
Now, speaking of slings and arrows, I think, Don, that it's only right that I could actually defend myself against my friend Peter Rosenberg.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. I didn't attack you.
Oh, well, you kind of did, that I'm really leaning into Yankee boy.
That's right. Well, it's an insult.
It was the most foolish comment a manager has ever made, because David Cohn has done the statistical breakdown of this stadium. It is considered a pitcher's park. And the home run that he talked about, that one game one, would have been a home run in 26 of the 30 ballparks in Major League Baseball, including the one where he manages. It was a dumb comment, so I leaned into him making a dumb comment. And to prove me right, he backpedaled today and even used Don's line on the air. He must have strong hamstrings the way he backpedaled.
Well, I thought Boone's response was terrific. You can't be 99% when there's 30 ballparks.
So. Now, how did he do that, Don? He did that in real time. He must be like a mathematical, like Doogie Howser.
Listen, I'm no math guy, but is that really genius level to know you can't have 99% when we're talking about an even number?
I guess he thought like that, but
I want to give him credit.
Maybe but you really shouldn't give him any credit. It's the ultimate in Captain Literal, man.
But listen, we opened the show, Michael, saying that Woodward was wrong, right, because that area of the field does play to left-handed hitters. Yankee fans were screaming they didn't have enough of them, because I think everybody knows that's a short porch.
But it was a righty who hit the home run he's talking about.
Exactly. And that's why he was wrong, because of the statistics. And also, it's a loser's lament. You lost the game. It's not like the dimensions change when the Rangers are up. So I always had this argument with you when you thought that Citi Field played unfair because it was so deep. But it's like, if both teams are playing it, then it's the definition of fair. It's fair. It may not be fair to hitters, but it's fair as far as the game's concerned. And certainly it might play unfair to a right-handed pitcher facing a left-handed batter because of the short porch. But both teams can take advantage of that fact.
Yeah,
don't start screaming when you lose a game. And the only person that really should feel disrespected is Gleyber Torres. He had a legitimate major league home run that won a game, and he's got to answer questions about it was a little league home run. Give me a break. It wasn't a home run that I hit in the Mark Sasso softball. It was a legitimate major league home run. An oppo.
It really made Woodward seem kind of small. And then his player, Eli White, hit a home run that would have been a home run in only two ballparks in all of Major League Baseball. So you give it and take it away. You know what I found out today? I joked on the air. It's not as if they moved the fences back when the Rangers are up. You know, when Bill Veeck owned the Cleveland Indians, Don, and Peter, he actually had the walls on runners. And when the Yankees would come into town, he would push the walls back like 10 feet. And then the league got wind of it, and they stopped it immediately. But he actually did do that. Yep. He made the park bigger for a home run hitting team.
And wasn't there speculation in the Metrodome, that big fan that was behind home plate?
Yes.
They turn it on when the Twins were up and turn it off when the opposition was up?
And, you know, I brought up Bill Parcells when he coached the Giants. Didn't they open up the those gates when somebody was kicking a field goal against him or offense was coming that way?
Yes. It's the gamesmanship of the ballpark, but I think Bill took it too far. Bill Veeck, that is.
That's a little bit too
far.
Like
literally moving the – yeah, but still, I mean, listen, I said before, Michael, obviously this has come across as disrespectful to the Rangers, but Chris Woodward's punishment should be to manage the Rangers until he's fired.
And also, Chris Woodward was one of six other people that desperately wanted that Yankee job when Boone got it. He was interviewed for that job, so he wanted to manage here in Williamsport, didn't he?
Yeah, and he didn't exactly lose the job because he recommended to Brian Cashman that they get rid of the short porch.
By the way, Peter,
he'd managed to.
I thought that you would appreciate it. I sent out two tweets that have been liked by over 10,000 people.
Again, I said that's leaning into it. I respect it.
But that's not. It's just being fair, Yankee boy.
No, but what Peter's trying to say, if you don't mind me speaking for you, Peter,
please speak on my behalf,
is that it's kind of a Yankee response. You're leaning into the Yankee side of it, and so Yankee boy is obviously pejorative.
Yeah, but you think?
In this, because of how it's used by the people
right.
that don't like you. But it is a Yankee thing to do. It's not something that the Oriole announcer would do. You know, it's something the Yankee announcer would do.
Well, if somebody said something incorrect about Camden Yards, I mean, I wasn't protecting a Yankee player. I was protecting an edifice.
I think that
Woodward obviously has an edifice complex. He doesn't like his edifice.
Well, if that had been about Camden Yards, I don't think you would have put up multiple tweets.
I put up two tweets, okay, Mr. Social Media, and they were both amazing.
Does multiple mean more than one?
Yes. Yeah, but multiple, you're making it out to be like I sent out 15 of them.
No, but you sent out two. We brought that up, which is still multiple.
Thank you.
And
confirmed.
And also, it was, you were playing to the room.
Yeah, I like the room.
Bro, that's
right.
So that's all Peter's saying. Again,
that's all I said.
We got to come up with something. This Yankee boy is pejorative. So Michael's going to react in a negative way when you say
fair.
That.
That's fair.
Yankee, how about Yankee guy?
Much better. When we come back, Yankee guy's going to talk about an amazing performance by Nestor Cortes. And I kind of disagreed with the Yankees allowing him to go for the no-hitter. A little shocking, right?
Yes.
So we'll talk about that. And obviously a big Ranger game tonight. Not a must-win, but pretty darn close. 1-800-919-3776. Kay in Williamsport. Don in Pittsburgh, and Peter in a place unknown.
New York.
So we're right now on 98.7 ESPN, and we'll be joined by Yes in just a moment.
New York.
When are we going to be joined by Yes, do you know?
I'd say 10 minutes maybe. They're in the post-game show.
Sure!
1-0
well,
Yankee win.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
Pre-game wouldn't make any sense.
No.
Wow. You're really hot tonight, aren't you?
I'm really fired up. Seriously.
You know what? You know what, Peter? He gets one nice compliment from Raceman, and now he's, like, just so cocky.
Oh, Bob loves him.
And Bob loves him some Don.
The things that Michael suggested on text really kind of – Peter really took the steam out of what was a very nice day for me yesterday. Really. Honestly.
What do you mean a nice day? I said it today. It didn't take any steam from yesterday. It took steam from today. I was trying to depress you today.
Yeah, and you did.
We'll be back right here on 98.7 ESPN.
You guys are doing a great job today without the K-ster.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so welcome back to the Michael K. Show. Nestor Cortes flirted with baseball immortality in the Bronx today, but he fell short, 5 outs short. And it's time for Diamond Notes, brought to you by Two by London, the engagement shop at London Jewelers. So Nestor Cortes had a no-hitter through 7. He had also thrown more pitches than he's thrown all year. And Aaron Boone decided to send him out in a nothing-nothing game. And I did not envy Aaron Boone at that point, because that was a low-hanging fruit decision. If he sends the guy out, he gives up a home run, the Yankees lose 1-0, he's going to be vilified. If he takes the guy out after 7 no-hit innings, he's going to be vilified, just like Dave Roberts was when he took out Clayton Kershaw. So he decided to let him go out there and pitch, and he got the first out. So the first out, when he threw that pitch in the 8th inning to get the first out, it was a strikeout of Culberson. That was the first pitch he has ever thrown in the 8th inning in a major league ballgame. So now he's 5 outs away, but the Yankees still have to score, and he gives up a base hit to Eli White, kind of a looping single into center field, and that's that. And the reason that I probably would have taken him out after 7, and I don't know if Don and Peter would agree, they probably don't, is because it was a nothing-nothing game. Because the Yankees did not want to lose a series to the Texas Rangers. They had not been scoring. You don't want to waste a performance like this just for a chance at getting him a slice of baseball immortality. But they did it, and I give him credit. And I just remember what Joe Torre once told David Cone. I've got to make my decision, by the way, after the 7th inning. Because once I let you pitch after the 7th inning and you get out of the 8th inning with a no-hitter, I don't care where your pitch count is, I can't take you out then. And that's why Roberts took out Kershaw after 7, because once you let him go into the 8th, then you're going into and I don't say this in an antagonistic way, Don, then you're going into Santana territory where you can't take him out no matter what the pitch count is. I thought it was a roll of the dice by Aaron Boone. And speaking of Aaron Boone, let's listen to what he had to say and why. He was asked moments ago, were you debating sending Cortez out for the eighth?
I didn't wrestle at all with sending him back out for the eighth.
So hypothetically, he gets through that eighth, even though his pitch count's even more elevated, you would give him the chance?
It just depends. Like, I mean, if he's at 105, 108, 110, yeah, probably. If we're getting into what I would have considered a danger zone, then maybe not. But no, he was going.
All right, so Cortez was asked how he felt physically going for the...
Honestly, I felt pretty good back out for the eighth. I thought I threw like seven pitches, six for strikes, I want to say. Body felt good, obviously, when the emotions and the adrenaline is rushing, everything feels great. But now I feel like I got hit by a truck.
I'll tell you what, guys, and I said this on the TV.
Honestly, I felt pretty good.
Enough, sir.
You could make the case, and he doesn't fit the central casting. He doesn't fit the role stuff-wise. But since the beginning of last year, you could make the argument he's one of the best starting pitchers in baseball. He's got an ERA under, I think it's 1.5, something like that now. He's been unbelievable. I mean, he was dealing today. Now, Texas doesn't have a great order. They don't have a great lineup. But he just shut them down, and he's pretty darn impressive, guys.
Well, there's a couple of things at play, and we'll get a chance to talk to Aaron on Thursday about it a little deeper. And I'm not sure if he addressed it at all in the post game, but there's a couple of things at play here for me. All right, number one, he didn't have to worry about the bullpen because what was it, Peralta and Loaisiga in the Cole game, and then King pitched not great in the second game of the doubleheader, but they didn't have to go that deep into the bullpen. So I would think there were pretty much all hands on deck. So he could have went to the bullpen. I think the reason he didn't, Michael, is because if Cortez is this good, then I want to see if I can push him a little farther. Why not? Would he throw 94 pitches? If you were going to get elite status, and Andrew let us know that you couldn't make a bet on him winning the Cy Young, it wasn't even an option.
Now it is.
Now it is, because clearly he has shown you that he can be, you know, right next to Cole. Like, he could be the second best pitcher on the staff and probably is right now. I want to know how far I can go with him. You know, and I'm sorry, you can't be a Cy Young candidate if I'm pulling the plug on you in 90-plus pitches. Now, I think you got to be within reason, but if the guy's pitching a no-hitter, I think he's entitled to start that eighth inning. And if he's at, like, 99, 100, and you can go 110 with him, as it sounded like Aaron said he might, well, then I think he deserves to start the ninth. And plus, he might have been your best option in a scoreless tie of trying to win the game anyway. If you've reached that elite status, Michael, I can't be worried at 94 pitches that I'm going to hurt you.
Since the beginning of last season, guys, he has the best ERA in the American League, 2.52.
That's crazy.
But he hasn't pitched a lot of innings, right?
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't go that deep into games.
Right.
But it's still pretty amazing what he's done.
No, I'm not devaluing what he's done. What I'm saying is, if you want to get to the next level, I think the next stage is to be able to go deeper into games, right? An ace of a staff or somebody that's considered for the Cy Young isn't a 5-6 innings pitcher. He's a 7-8 inning pitcher,
right?
Or at least 7. Nobody seems to really go that deep anymore. But you know what I'm saying is that I could see Boone trying to test, all right, let's see, in a key spot like this, not just a no-hitter, but a scoreless tie, let's see how he handles this situation. And I think he handled it brilliantly.
He did, but I just wonder, you know, you don't want to, like, try new things in a scoreless tie. I mean, you brought in Clay Holmes, booms, he gets a double play, ends up getting the win anyway. So I just thought it was a gamble. I'm not saying he was wrong. You know, we were talking about it during the break, and Paul O'Neill agreed with me. And I think Cameron was leaning toward that as well, where you probably take him out here. And there would have been a huge uproar, and Boone would have been vilified for it. And I give him credit for taking the gutsy move. But, you know, everybody wants to be a major league manager. Everybody thinks it's so easy. There's no number that Boone could go to there. Nobody's sending down a computer sheet or readout to tell you, well, this is the algorithm that tells you whether you stay with him or not. He had to go by his gut.
But maybe it just came down to, maybe the no-hitter wasn't even something that was on his mind. Just that, does he give us the best option in the eighth inning?
No, I don't think he does. I mean, as good as he is, you know, Clay Holmes has been just lights out. I mean, Clay Holmes is one of the best pitchers in baseball, too, and he's well rested.
But you also have a pitcher that's been lights out, hasn't allowed a hit.
Yeah.
You know, I think we get so caught up in treating these kids with kid gloves, Michael, and then what happens? He goes out there, and let's say he does pitch the extra inning and then gets hurt. He could end up getting hurt anyway.
Right.
I just want to know how he feels. And it was interesting after the game where he said he felt like he got hit by a truck. Maybe that's something they'll also consider and go, hey, he really felt that 7 1/3. So maybe we can't push him that far if he's feeling like that. And maybe, and then if he ends up getting lit up in the next start, maybe that factors into it too. I mean, you got to figure. I just think as a manager, you want to know what you got. And he's still young enough, Michael, to kind of get a feel for what you can and can't do with him.
Peter, I know you appreciate a good story. 36th round pick, released a couple of times, released by the Orioles.
Wow. Yeah,
that's
by the Orioles. That's how he got back to the Yankees the second time. And then released by the Yankees, and then he's in Seattle. And then released by Seattle, and he gets back to the Yankees. I mean, this is one of the great stories that you'll ever hear. This guy does not look like a prototypical pitcher. He doesn't pitch like a prototypical pitcher. He's taking a pitch that he essentially learned last year from Corey Kluber, a cutter, and made it an absolute weapon. And he makes people look late on 92-mile-an-hour fastballs. It's fun to watch him play.
It's in. You know, you got to give credit to the Yankee because he's a Yankee now, but the Yankees let him go twice.
Yeah.
So, like, what's going on here? What has happened? Something must have happened. Somebody must have tinkered with him, or maybe he did something himself to make that change. When you've got, oh, listen, we can make fun of the Orioles all we want. They're still a major league team. Seattle, Yankees twice. Took a look at him and said, no, we can't fix him. And now he's fixed.
How often does someone on their third stint with an organization – turn into something?
Not very often. And there's more to this story too. He never was in the shape that he's in right now, and the reason is that he had to go to the Dominican to pitch in winter ball for the extra money. So after, you know, finally, you know, making his mark with the Yankees last year and feeling secure, he spent the whole winter working on pitching and working out, not just pitching in the Dominican to make spare change to make ends meet. The story just keeps getting better. It's almost like a Disney movie. It really is. I mean, if he's on the mound for the seventh game of the World Series, you know, go write that and not have it thrown back in your face by some producer and say, oh, this can't happen. Good stuff. Really is good stuff. So the Yankees scored just 5 runs in the series, and they won 2 out of 3. So their offense is shut down just a little bit, and they've got to certainly deal with that. But at this point, the first team in the American League to get to 20 wins – and the only two teams in baseball at 20 wins, the Mets and the Yankees.
Yeah, and I kind of just out of half-kidding jumped Peter earlier. Oh, I don't want to hear about what's wrong with the – are you worried about the Mets' offense? You know, Andrew was talking to me about, well, Scherzer maybe hasn't been what he expected. I want nothing but positive right now. The two teams have combined for 40 wins through the first month-plus of the season. There's no negative. It's all good. It's all good.
There you have it from Don. It's all good. All good. Well, those are Diamond Notes brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Pick or design the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget at any of their 6 area locations. We'll take your phone calls. I've got a message for some fans that got a little chirpy on social media during the game.
Uh-oh. Today?
Yeah. You'll definitely. You're going to want to stay tuned for this. You really will. Kay LaGreca-Rosenberg and you on 98.7 ESPN.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
So once again, I checked this.
Honestly, I felt pretty good.
Oh, we heard you. Oh, my God. Nestor, please.
I checked as I was walking the distance to the little mini studio with rats in it. And, you know, social media... that I ruined the no-hitter because I mentioned it. So, everybody, I don't want to go through this all the time. So, get closer to the radio if you
can. Oh, I love getting close.
This will not stop. John Sterling mentions it. I mention it. Any broadcaster that is a legitimate broadcaster who's doing his job is going to mention that somebody's pitching a no-hitter. Sorry. You do your little voodoo stuff. I'll do what I have to do as a job. Stop it. You're wasting your breath. And you're wasting your time. I will continue to do it. I did it for Corey Kluber's no-hitter. He got it. I did it to David Wells' perfect game. He got it. I did it Doc Gooden's no-hitter. He got it. I did it through David Cone's perfect game. He got it. So stop it. You don't get it.
Well, it also, and Peter will appreciate this, it's professional malfeasance. You know, you've got people, you want to try to keep people engaged in the program. All right? Now, the bug is going to tell you the score. But does the bug always tell you that there's no hits?
No.
So you want to let people know that are flipping around, hey, maybe I'm going to watch this game because there's a no-hitter. Like, it just makes sense. And you got to get everybody to stop it, or they're not talking about it in the Ranger broadcast. As you said, Sterling's talking about it on the radio. Peter and I brought it up while it was going on the air. So who's to blame for jinxing it? You think everybody in the world's not going to bring it up?
It really makes people look, kind of simple.
Yeah, it's simple thinking. It's
like, I mean, people... and really, if you want, Don, you should read it. I mean, vitriolic. I hate Michael Kay. He just ruined this no-hitter.
Do you really
not Eli
want...
White, Michael Kay
Honestly,
did.
I know we're all trying to collect people, right, and have everybody like us. But somebody that's that simple.
Let them go.
Do you really want them to like you? Wouldn't that bother you more if they liked you? That you're living your life and makes them happy.
That's a good point.
No, I think you should look at it as a positive. It's a compliment that they disrespect you.
If I had never ever called a no hitter, well, you might be onto something. You know, the witchcraft might be working. But as John Sterling said, if I can control the outcome of a game by the microphone, I deserve to be paid a whole lot more than I do.
Well, think about it. Vin Scully, it has retired.
Right.
So you're probably right up there with the most no-hitters called among television and radio voices, right? Like, who else would even be in the conversation?
It's amazing. I've been very fortunate.
So you haven't jinxed all of them?
No, I wonder how. I jinxed this one today, but not the Kluber one. I don't get it.
You rattled off a bunch.
I wish I had more of control. I had an Andy Hawkins no-hitter before it was taken away because you have to win no-hitters now. I had Melito Perez's no-hitter. It was rain-shortened, and that doesn't count anymore. Blah, 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 blah. I had the Astros six-pitcher no-hitter. Didn't jinx that. Kept saying it's a no-hitter. Five outs to a no-hitter. So grow up, everybody. I'm not going to change. So you're going to have to wait till I retire in like 15 or 20 years, and 30. Then maybe the next announcer might not say there's a no-hitter, and that person should be fired.
See, I'm going to take a different tact. I want those people to continue being them. Because it's a constant reminder how Michael's doing his job.
I love it.
I didn't think it represented that long a silence.
No,
so I'm going to take that.
It just happened.
I love it. I love it.
It was very.
By the way, Nestor Cortez at this point should be on the All-Star team. A lot of things could happen over the next couple of months, but as of this point, he's an American League All-Star pitcher who gets no run support whatsoever. None.
That's zero. It's odd how that happens, right?
His ERA is, I think, 2.56 in 20 starts since the beginning of last year. His record is 3-4. He doesn't get any run support.
That's why wins and losses are silly.
Yep. Let's go to Alphonse in Center Reach.
Alphonse.
Hey, Mike. First-time caller, long-time listener. You guys are the best on the radio.
Thank you. What's up?
Now, you touched on something that I was going to ask about, how Holmes got the win instead of Nestor. But if Nestor, if Holmes gives up a hit and the run scores, Nestor gets the loss,
yes.
Right?
Yes, yep, yeah. Absolutely.
My son, who just called you guys 2 weeks ago, just explained me there's a hold rule for the pitchers, for the relief pitchers. The guy gets the hold. So I didn't know that. It's my fault. But
no, but in this case, Alphonse, if you know he gets the win because when he got the double play, then it was still 0-0. Then the Yankees scored while he was still in the game, and Chapman came in, so he's the one who gets the win. I understand. The only thing Nestor got out of today was a lower ERA and a lot of respect,
But it's just so stupid because let's say Nestor went out there and pitched 4 2/3 innings of perfect baseball, didn't throw a ball. Right, struck out everybody he faced on 3 pitches, but had to leave the game with 2 outs in the 5th because of injury. And the game's 10-0 Yankees. He can't get the win because he didn't go 5.
Right.
But meanwhile, a closer can throw 1 pitch, blow the save, okay? Then the 2nd pitch, get an out, get out of the inning, his team scores, he gets the win. Stop it.
Yeah. It's very convoluted. Let's go to Jose in the Bronx. Jose.
Hey, what's up, guys?
How you doing, my friend?
I'm good, man. It's good to hear you guys. I just wanted to say I kind of disagree with Michael there. I feel like you definitely got to let Nestor go back out. I mean, I would totally agree if this was a game that you felt like it was a must-win, playoff implications. But honestly, as somebody who does blame Boone for a lot of things. I would not blame Boone if Nestor gives up a home run and they lose 1-0 because
Jose, yes. I love you. All right, so you come into this game not liking Boone the way it is, and he leaves Nestor out there in the 8th inning, and the first guy hits a home run. You're not going to blame him. Franz here, tell me, you're not going to blame him?
Well,
I gotta blame the offense. You can't get one run against the Rangers.
Give Yankee fans more credit than that, Michael. There would be people that complain, but they'd still be in the minority.
Hey,
even if he lost the game, I think every Yankee fan wanted to see this guy come out there and pitch the 8th, and if possible, the 9th inning.
And Jose, I don't say he was dead wrong. I don't. I probably would have pulled Nestor because this guy's really important too. He's really important to the Yankees, and if he had to put 140 pitches on that arm. Because, as I said, no matter what his pitch count was after 8 innings, Don and Peter, they had to send him out for the 9th.
Well, see, I disagree with that. Why do they have to do anything? You know, if they're such a slave to the pitch, we saw it with Kershaw, right? I mean, a perfect game through 7, and they pulled the plug because of the pitch number. So this whole idea, Torrey was a different era of baseball. That was in 96. But still, you get what I'm saying, Pete? Oh, they have to put him out in the 9th inning. They don't have to do anything.
It's just hard. It's hard once you get there to then pull him.
Yeah, I agree.
But you at some point, you got to do it, right?
All right, and if you're saying that you could pull him after 8 then, Don, then why wouldn't you pull him at the 7 when your bullpen's the best in baseball? Why wouldn't you just go to the bullpen at that point?
Because you still want to see it through. I mean, we're talking about a guy, what did he throw, 94 pitches, okay? So it's not an inordinate amount. It's the most he's thrown, but it's still you want to see the limits that you can take this guy, all right? And you're still trying to learn that. Now, even if he's only got 3 pitches left, here's my logic. Then I'd bring him out in the 9th inning if he's got 3 pitches. Maybe you get lucky, you get all 3 on 3 pitches. But if he's going to hit the number, then I'm taking him out when he hits that number. And if it's such an analytic-driven sport that after the game, if people are jumping, you say, hey, we weren't going to let him throw over 100 pitches. We gave him the opportunity, and he ran out of pitches.
Yeah,
so
but I believe that the number becomes fluid because once you're closing in on history, you're probably going to expand the number, just like Terry Collins did with Santana. Hey,
but that was obviously – it turned out to be a mistake because of what happened with Santana, but you don't have to be fluid. Maybe history tells you that.
Right.
But if you really are a slave to these numbers, Michael, then no, you don't have to be fluid. He's allowed to throw 100 pitches. He's got six left. Let's let him pitch the ninth inning and see maybe he gets lucky. And otherwise, you know, when we get to pitch 100, two out, I don't care. We're going to take him out.
Don, people's heads would explode. So let's say he gets two outs in the ninth inning and he is on. He's at his pitch limit. You're not going to let him get the next out?
Well, I would hope that there is still – like fluid of, all right, we don't want him to throw 100 pitches, but we'll allow him 101, 102.
Right.
But not to where it gets to 140. I mean, if he walks the next three guys, Michael, even if he's an out away, not only am I pulling him because of the no-hitter, but it might also affect the outcome of the game. I mean, I know a no-hitter is somewhat rare, but it's not the rarest thing you've ever seen where you've got to break the guy to do it. But listen, you talk about getting attacked. Who is attacked more than with the Kershaw situation? That was still six more outs to go. You're going to get killed anyway.
Right.
So you've got to do what you think is right for your team.
If you're two outs away, you're going to get attacked. That's why Torrey said what he said. If I leave you in for the seventh, I'm kind of locked in to leave you in through nine.
I know, but I think that's kind of lazy. Because, again, what's the number? All right, let's say, just for sake of argument, Nestor gets out of the eighth inning. Because he threw 94 pitches, right? So let's say
that he gets out of the eighth inning with 102.
No, but yeah, and you don't want him to throw more than 110.
Right.
All right? You let him start the ninth inning, and maybe he gets it, you know, with those eight pitches and gets it. Now, if you get the two outs and he's on pitch 109, well, we're talking – come on, I can't imagine two or three more pitches is going to kill you. You know, but if he walks the guy, well, now you're talking about – all right, now I got to pull him because now we're 5-6 over. He still has to throw more pitches to get the next guy out. When you get down to one out. But when you're talking an inning, Michael, where a good inning is still 15 pitches, there's a big difference between an inning and an out.
All right, let's take a brief timeout. We're up against the clock. We got to talk Rangers and Penguins. We'll continue with the Yankees and the great performance by Nestor Cortes Jr., who has emerged as one of the best starters in baseball. It's Kay LaGreca Rosenberg, and you will be joined by Yes in just a moment. Right now, we're on 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Michael K. Show.
So Cortes was asked how he felt physically.
Honestly, I felt pretty good going back out for the eighth. Body felt good, obviously, and the emotions and the adrenaline rushing. Everything feels great, but now I feel like I got hit by a truck.
If Cortes is this good, then I want to see if I can push him a little farther. Why not? Would he throw 94 pitches? If you are going to get elite status, and I want to know how far I can go with him. And I'm sorry, you can't be a Cy Young candidate if I'm pulling the plug on you in the 90-plus pitches. Now, I think you got to be within reason, but if the guy's pitching a no-hitter, I think he's entitled to start that eighth inning. And if he's at like 99-100 and you can go 110 with him, as it sounded like Aaron said he might, well, then I think he deserves to start the ninth.
The Michael K. Show.
You can fart a ball out of the stadium.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. A big day on the show. Yankees beat the Rangers 1-0 to take 2 out of 3. Yankees are now 12-4. At Yankee Stadium, they have 20 wins. First team in the American League to get to 20. First team in the National League to get to 20, the New York Mets. So good times in baseball, New York. And it could have been just wild if Nestor Cortes had been able to get five more outs without giving up a hit. But with one out in the eighth inning, pitching in an inning he'd never pitched in before, he gave up a single to Eli White. Got a nice ovation from a very small stadium crowd. Remember, this was not a scheduled game. This was supposed to be an off day for both teams, but they had to make up one of the rainouts. And the Yankees now will welcome the Toronto Blue Jays into town. But Cortes has just been absolutely unbelievable. He is not your prototypical starter. He doesn't have starter stuff. He just doesn't. He doesn't have the kind of stuff I think that would be, let's put it this way, I want to say this the right way. He doesn't have the kind of stuff that scouts would recommend somebody be drafted. He doesn't have that 99-mile-an-hour fastball. He just doesn't. And he was a 36-round draft pick the way it was by the Yankees. And that was then. He didn't pitch like he does now. So now he throws nasty, filthy cutters. He's amazing. And you could make the case that he is one of the top two or three starters in all of baseball since the end or the since the beginning of last season. And there are statistics to back that up. That's not hyperbole. That's fact. That's how good he's been. Everybody got a little nervous when he struggled against Toronto, gave up four walks and four innings his last start, but he held them to just two runs despite a lot of traffic on the bases. And, guys, he came out today, and he was absolutely dealing. And, listen, I'm not rooting up there, but I root for stories. That would have been a great story for this kid, what he's gone through to get to this point, to be so magnificent, and to get a no-hitter in a Yankee uniform. It would have been unbelievable, but five outs short.
And all that said, too, Michael, it's not like it's not an area they need improvement. They do. If there's a negative about this team, it might be, do they have enough starting pitching to make a long run in the playoffs? If Cortez is going to be a stud, Michael, and you pair him with Cole, and then you get Severino to be what he was before his Tommy John, you're talking about three significant pitchers, and that might be all you need when you get to the playoffs.
Yeah, pretty amazing.
So they need this. This is not gravy. I mean, this is something that I think they really needed and kind of changes how you feel about this team moving forward, if this is real.
And so far, it's been real in terms of the starters. You know, their ERA as a starting staff is like 2.5, and they have not missed a go-round. Now, they're going to have to add a starter for Thursday because of the doubleheader. You can't pitch somebody on short rest, so they'll probably call up somebody for the first game of the four-game set in Chicago. But what a story. Really, what a story. I mean, other than the Texas Rangers, I think a lot of people were rooting for Nestor Cortez. It's just a story of perseverance. You know, we said it earlier. Up until this past winter, he had to pitch in the Dominican Republic every winter in order to earn more money. Not that he wanted to refine his craft, which you can do in the Dominican Republic, but he needed to earn the money. And this past year, because he finally showed the Yankees that he's worth keeping, he really worked on his craft, and it has paid off. And then, you know, on a May day in the Bronx, he almost became part of forever.
That's we talked about this during the Kershaw thing. That's what separates baseball from every other sport, is that you can have a nondescript Ranger-Yankee game in the middle of May on a Monday afternoon and came within five outs of being a really special moment.
Yeah.
Yep. And it keeps you watching it, too. I mean, it draws you in. And then it's, at the same time, Don, it's also the same sport that, because of a bad weather forecast, can make half the league not play all weekend. So,
yeah, that's the sport. That is the sport.
That's it in a nutshell. Take the good with the bad.
So, congratulations to Cortez. Yankees get the victory. Aaron Judge scores a run in the bottom of the eighth inning on a double by Anthony Rizzo. Both of them had been struggling. So that's all the Yankees needed. They scored just five runs against Texas in three games, and they ended up winning two of the three. So that tells you how good their pitching has been. Now we shift over to the Rangers. Ranger fans, we partnered with MSG Networks, home of the New York Rangers, to give our fans a chance to score merchandise signed throughout the playoffs. Be listening later this hour for your chance to score a team autograph stick. A team autograph stick.
Sure.
Brought to you by MSG Networks. The Rangers' run for the Stanley Cup continues tonight on MSG Networks. Now, it continues tonight, Don, but there's a chance it could take a big step toward ending tonight if they don't win this game. The only thing that shocked me about Game 3, the only thing, is that Shesterkin showed that he was human. He got knocked out after one period. Rangers ended up tying the score. It was 4-4, but then they got a goal, the Penguins did, in the third period to win. So the Rangers are now 2-1. They're down. And they need this game tonight, and it's going to be interesting to see. Don, you were there. You called the game. Do you think that Shesterkin was actually a little bit intimidated by the crowd? Because I heard they were giving the sing-song Igor chant and all that. He didn't look like Igor.
No, he didn't look like Igor, but it wasn't all on him. And I don't think he was pulled because of his performance as much as it was, hey, let's just try to change the momentum here. And sometimes coming out with a different goaltender to start the second can do that, and it certainly did because the Rangers were dominant in the second period and tied the game at 4. I got to tell you, the building was electric. It really was right up there as one of the loudest buildings I've ever been in that moment. And this is the first home game of the first round of the playoffs for the Penguins. And so this whole city is just sick for the Penguins because I think they sense that this could be their last kick at the can here.
Absolutely.
And I think it will be. So, like I was telling Peter earlier, I got picked up for a lift to go to dinner last night, and the driver had a Penguin jersey on. Like, they're just so into this team. And then there was the fluky goal that went off his pad, and the net came off the moorings. They ended up disallowing the goal, then allowing the goal via replay. So that was a crazy thing, and a couple of weird bounces on the second goal. So things certainly were going their way. And then they come out like a house on fire in a second. But what the killer was, yeah, the goal by Heinen certainly was. But they had 35 seconds on a power play that carried over to the third. And then back-to-back power plays in the third and didn't convert. And then Domingue makes an amazing save on Shesterkin. They go back the other way and they win the game. And then they had the two empty netters. So 7-4 looks like a blowout, but it was a one-goal game at that point. Thought Gallant maybe pulled the goaltender a little too early, but, you know, that's nitpicking. So what the Rangers have to avoid, Michael, is when they have their letdown, they can't have it be catastrophic, like what happened in the second period in Game 1, where 2-0 all of a sudden, you know, became the lead was gone. And then 4-1 in the first period. That's tough to overcome. They fought like heck to get back to 4-4, but that would have been a different game if you're just down 2-1 or 3-1. They've got to make sure that the ebbs and flows, that those ebbs aren't, like, disastrous. So putting together 60 minutes looks like Lindgren's, again, going to be a game-time decision. And Gallant said that he may go 7 defensemen and 11 forwards if Lindgren can play. So that's going to give a forward some extra minutes to maybe produce a little bit more offense and also take some of the pressure off of Lindgren having to play a lot of minutes after coming off his lower body injury. So Shesterkin back in net. He was pulled twice during the course of the year, came back with wins in both occasions. So I expect to see a bounce back from him and the Rangers tonight. And, hey, they've come back from 3-1 before, but, you know, three straight wins against this team is going to be tough. So even it up tonight.
So, Don, in spite of giving up four goals Saturday, I should say, how would you say Louis Domingue's been so far overall? Like, he's obviously doing enough to keep the Penguins in the series.
Yeah, he's been good. You know, like, he gave up the 5 goals in Game 2, but I can't say he's let any stinkers in. He's staying within himself. And he's never proven he can do it over the long haul, Peter. But he has had moments, and he had that great save against Shesterkin in the third. Hey, you're in a 4-4 tie. You just blew a 4-1 lead, and he's making saves. He's a little overly aggressive. I think the Rangers might be able to take advantage of that. I don't know if you noticed in the games, Peter, some of these saves, he's really coming out of the crease and being aggressive and cutting the angles. So if the Rangers can get some accurate passes down there, I do think that he can get exposed. But so far, you're kind of creating a legend here. A kid that, again, 30 is not a kid, but somebody who looked like he was, you know, done could actually be the guy that leads this team out of the first round. And Jari did skate today, so I guess there's a chance he could be available later in the series. But maybe Domingue will make it a moot point by continuing to win.
And let's just be real. Michael, of course, is Captain Literal Man, so no, it's not must win. You know, they could go
pretty
back.
Pretty darn important.
But, Don, I talk about this every year with the playoffs. If the Penguins win tonight and they go back to the Garden up 3-1. You know that feeling. The Garden's going to be rocking. But then if the Penguins go up 1-0, you could immediately the air can get taken out of a building. And now you're just desperately trying to hold on to a series.
Well, teams that score first in the playoffs are 24-4. So scoring the first goal is vitally important no matter what.
Yep.
The problem with coming back 3-1, guys, and I can't say this is exactly chapter and verse, but usually in any sport, Michael will tell you in baseball, when you come back from 3-1 down, something changes. Like when they came back against Pittsburgh in 2014, down 3-1, you know, Martin St. Louis' mom died, and it kind of was a rallying cry for them, or you make a goalie change, and that goalie turns momentum around. I mean, really, you're going to bench Shesterkin and have Georgiev save the day? I mean, what player's not playing that you're going to throw into one? Like, what changes can you make? Otherwise, it's just going straight forward with what you got and just hoping something changes momentum-wise. You don't want to have your season rely on something like that. Pittsburgh's too good a team to expect to go out there and win three straight games. Hank was able to do it back in 2014, but he had tons of postseason experience. Shesterkin's not at that level just yet to be able to. So let's avoid that at all costs and just take it one game at a time, even the series. Then it becomes the best of three. You get home ice back. So all that's at stake tonight.
Now let's go to the phones, 1-800-919-3776. Also, a football note, the Giants finally released James Bradberry, and it tells you the viciousness of the salary cap era. He's one of their best defensive players, and they just can't afford him, and they have to sign their draft picks, and you have to get rid of a guy that would have helped you because you just can't afford him. It's unbelievable. And, you know, we had on Joe Shane, And he said, you know, we can kick the can down the road, but that's what got us into this predicament. So they don't want to kick the can down the road. And I tell you, by releasing him, guys, they made themselves worse.
Well, it saved themselves $10 million. But as you said, you got to sign draft picks, and there's still a lot of work to do. That's why I said, Michael, you got to be patient. But unless Jones turns out to be a star in the making and they find something in him, you're probably not going to have a great season. And I'm not going to do this because I don't agree with tanking. But if you're a Giant fan and I tell you, whisper in your ear, yeah, you're going to be a 6 or 7 win team this year. You know, you're not going to be that great, but you're not going to be awful. Wouldn't you rather be a 2-win team and get a quarterback in the draft next year? Like you don't root for that, but that's kind of has to be the thinking, right? Is that how is this team going to improve if Daniel Jones isn't the quarterback and you're picking like 12 next year? It's going to take a while for this team to turn the corner. That's why I tell Giant fans, you're going to have to be patient. There's no quick fix here. How are you supposed to fix this quick? You got cap hell. You're not sure you got a quarterback. You have to reconstruct the offensive line through draft picks. How is this supposed to happen overnight? How?
I don't think it will. I don't. Anybody expecting it, they're going to be wrong. Let's go to Justin in White Plains. Justin.
Hi. Hope everybody's having a great day. I just want to say that the most recent Thursday interview with Boone, or maybe it was the one before, he totally won me over going forward. I think all the Yankee fans kind of play armchair manager and there's a love-hate relationship, but Boone's my guy. I'll ride with him to death, especially after today. If you saw his post-game presser when they were trying to ask him, you know, did you have a hard line? He very emphatically was like, nope, Nestor was going out there. I was going to let him finish.
You know what Boone needs, Justin? You know what he needs? If he ever won a world championship, I think he'd be one of the most popular managers we've ever seen because he's got everything else going for him.
That's so true.
Got a great personality. Am I right, Peter? He's that guy that you want to like. And the only reason that Yankee fans just grade him on a different curve is because the Yankees get graded on a different curve. Either you win a championship or you failed. And you're right. He has the game-winning home run against the Red Sox in 2003. He would be beloved because he does everything right. He's just that guy. He's that guy you want representing you. Yeah. But they need him to win a championship to get off his back.
God, because of his age, he can be the manager here forever.
Yeah, another 20 years.
I mean, again, he's got energy. He's fun. He's somebody I think that Yankee fans can rally around, but because they're held to a different standard and you don't win because they love him now because the team's, you know, one of the best teams in baseball, Michael, but they're a 5-game losing streak away from him being hated again.
But
talking to him every Thursday, he's fun, he's engaging, he doesn't take himself too seriously, mm-hmm. He loves the game, he loves this team, he understands what it is to be a manager of the Yankees, he embraces the city. There's really nothing not to like about him other than he hasn't won a championship yet. That's it.
Let's go to a Tom in Old Bridge. Tommy.
Yeah, hi. I watch a lot of the Yankee games, and I noticed, especially today, a lot of the low pitches below the strike zone, especially against Judge, they've been calling strikes.
Yep.
And the Yankees are yelling from the dugout and complaining and cursing or whatever. But I was wondering, is Boone allowed to go to home plate in between innings with like an iPad and show it to the umpire? This is what we were yelling about. I was wondering.
Oh, no.
So this way he doesn't, without cursing or yelling or arguing, just show him this is what the guys were yelling about. And the umpire could look at it and say, gee, I better adjust my strike zone. I am calling these low pitches strikes.
Well, I mean, Tom, it's a great thought, but he'd get thrown out of media if he did that. Second of all, they know. I mean, coming into this past week, since his career began in 2017, he's had 366 strike calls on balls under the lower limit of the strike zone. They're not used to calling a strike zone for a 6-foot-7-inch guy. Now, those that want to defend it will say, well, he also doesn't get rung up on pitches, you know, that would be high strikes. That might be the case, but I think there's way more instances of this guy getting struck out or getting put down in the count on a pitch that was below the strike zone. They're not used to a guy being this big. Right. This guy from his knees to his feet, that's not the normal player's knees to the feet. So they're looking at the ball like the distance from the ground, and they're saying, well, that's about right. Well, not to Aaron Judge, it's not. And I don't know how they're going to stop it. I don't know. The Yankees have complained. Boone got thrown out in Toronto. Today was the first time I've seen Aaron Judge really get angry about it, but they haven't been able to change it.
I know, but, you know, sometimes it just comes down to instead of changing it, you change. If they're not going to adjust, then you adjust. These are not unhittable pitches. So if he knows that that's going to get called a strike, at what point does Judge have to adjust and say, all right, I'm not going to beat my head against the wall, get my manager thrown out. I'm going to have to start swinging at these pitches.
Well, I think I've told the story a million times on the show. John Hirschbeck used to have a gigantic strike zone, and it used to drive Wade Boggs nuts. So I once went to Wade Boggs and I said, since you know Hirschbeck calls pitches off the inside and outside corner by a lot, why don't you just expand your strike zone? And he got mad at me. He said, oh, well, wait a minute, Michael. So the strike zone that I've learned since I was 5 years old, right, I've got to change it now for one umpire. He goes, that's not the way it works. He said, you learn your strike zone, and that strike zone is sacrosanct. You can't expand it or close it. And he made the Hall of Fame.
But it was one umpire. If everybody's doing this to Judge, well, then he's going to have to adjust, because then that becomes the strike zone.
But I think it is every umpire does not call Judge right. No, no one calls the high strike on Judge, and they still are all calling low strikes.
Right. So that's what I said, Peter. So what do you do? Just continue to just do the same thing and strike out? Or do you just say, all right, I'm going to have to learn how to hit that pitch? If it's one umpire, then I totally get it. But if everybody's doing it to him.
Well, it would be one thing if he was getting got on both sides. If they were calling the high strike and the low strike, then he really got problems. But, Michael, correct me if I'm wrong, they're really not calling the high one.
No.
It's down low.
No. Because
so that
you
way
know what?
You
they're not
adjust.
Used to the pitch being that high either. So they're looking at the pitch that's, you know, a little below the letters, and for every other batter that's around his head, so they don't call it. It's amazing. They're not looking at the batter, Peter. They're looking at how far the pitch is from the ground.
Yes.
And how is Aaron Judge's strike zone the same as Jose Altuve? It can't be. He's a foot taller than him.
Well, that's why
more
Aaron
than a
was
foot taller.
Make the adjustment. Make the adjustment when he got thrown out the other day. But
right.
When does the player now have to make the adjustment?
I think it's harder for the player to make the adjustment. I really do.
I know. But if it's everybody, I get it. But again, it's not like it's an unhittable pitch. He can golf it right out of the stadium just as easily. But that happens in football, right? They want to know the officials because they've got a certain way of calling, you know, pass interference that you might have to adjust to. Same thing in hockey. You find out who the official is and what does he call. This one calls less slashing calls than holding calls. I think players always have to adjust, Michael. And if it's this one-sided, he's going to have no choice.
Well, great question on Twitter from Joseph Paulillo, who said, does the robo-ump adjust the height of player like in Judge's cases? Yes, it does. Now, he's also going to have more high strikes called on him, but the bottom of the strike zone is going to be adjusted. That's why I don't think pitchers want the robot ump. Well, I think batters want the robot ump, not the pitchers.
Well, here's a stupid question, Michael.
Love
does yes's strike the box, does it expand when Judge is up?
Yeah, supposedly it does. It grows and shrinks according to the size of the player, I was told.
Okay. Well, then so I would think so can the robot ump, right? Or should.
It should. All right, we'll come back. 1-800-919-3776. Yankees win 1-0. Mets are off. James Bradberry is released. And the Rangers play the Penguins in a big game 4, which you could hear right here. Don's calling the play-by-play, so that makes it even more special. Is this one on ESPN again, Don?
Yes. Bob Wischusen is here today. I got to see him in the morning skate. We're going for a drink after. I haven't seen Bob in forever.
You know what? Bob! That's the perfect guy to go out with. After calling a long hockey game, you're not going to have to say a word. You're not going to strain your voice. Bob will take over.
Yes, but I did miss Bob. It was good to see him today.
And it's also going to be on MSG. So there you have it. But listen, the TV, that's all great. But if you're in the car,
Ray Rowe.
Donnie's the guy you have to listen to. He's the man. Right here on Yes, on 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
By the way, I got to tell you something, Michael.
What's that?
I had never spent, I can't recall spending any time in Providence until this weekend.
You'll love it.
Well, it was too cold to say I love it because, like, I could tell it could be a nice town, but it was, I'm sure it was the same way here. It was just dark and gross and cold. So I wasn't like amazing, but what a food town. Awesome food. Incredible Italian food in Providence. I did not realize how much there was.
So you enjoyed yourself.
Good.
I did. We had a nice date night on Saturday.
Oh, I love it.
Went to a bar, had a beverage.
No. How is the Natster?
The Natster's good. Natster's good. She's got a lot of fun work stuff going on this week. We ate delicious. Don, I'm going to make you sick, but we had some of the best eggplant I've ever had in my life.
What is eggplant, Don? Tell us again.
It's meat that grows. It's like it passes itself. It's a plant that passes itself off as meat.
Right. It's wannabe meat.
That's what I like about it.
Because delicious. You don't want to eat meat. You want to have the eggplant.
Well, here's the thing, okay? I love eggplant parm. I can't bring myself to order veal, so eggplant's my only choice.
Well,
so
if I'm
going to do a parm, I cannot do veal. I love the parm, so I go eggplant.
Well, what's the matter with chicken parm?
If that's there, I'm open for a chicken parm. But to be honest, there's something about the texture and flavor of the eggplant I really dig.
I've accidentally had eggplant where, you know, somebody at the table ordered
eggplant.
And were you
sick?
I ordered chicken. I gagged. Whopper gag.
And then I had something.
Meat that grows.
I wonder if Michael's ever had it before. It's Don, it's delicious, so maybe not. I had maybe the best tiramisu I've ever had in my life.
I've had tiramisu, yeah.
How do you not like that?
I enjoy it. I enjoy a good tiramisu.
Okay. All right, just making sure. You worry me sometimes.
Let's go to Eddie in Hoboken. What's up, Eddie?
Hey, what's up, guys?
All good.
Don,
yeah.
How badly is Gallant getting outcoached this series so far?
Well, how? Give me an example where you believe he's being outcoached.
Well,
other than
I mean,
just being down 2-1.
No. The first two games of the series. How many times did we have to see either Malkin or Crosby out against the fourth line? With the Rangers having the final change at home, how does that ever happen?
Well, other than in game one, Gensel had the two goals. But otherwise, I think they've done a pretty decent job against Crosby, Rust, and Gensel. Gensel, they had the empty netters at the end of game three. But I think he likes how to try to get physical with that line. And I think he likes that matchup. I think that's the matchup that he wants. Now you get onto the road, you don't have as much control because they get the last change. But it's really, outside of that second period of game one, I don't think Gensel, Crosby, and Rust has really killed them.
I mean, I couldn't believe he scored 7 goals Saturday, none to Crosby.
Right. I mean, he assisted, and it was a great assist on the empty netter between his legs to Carter for the empty netter. But, you know, it's really just come down to, you know, look at the power play. Rodriguez, the second unit on the power play, scored twice. I mean, Evan Rodriguez was the one that killed them. You know, so I can't really, again, outside of one period in game one, tell me how the matchup has really crushed the Rangers of who they've had matched up against the Crosby line.
Steven in Northport. Steven.
Michael, Don, Peter, thanks for taking the call. Hockey question for Don. Islander fan, pretty disappointed with the move. Lou Lamoriello said he wants a new voice in there, but my question is it going to be a new voice? Because it seems like in hockey compared to the other four sports, they kind of just recycle the same 10, 15 coaches. So I want to see what you think on where they go from here. Thanks for taking the call, guys.
The thing is, we're so far removed from all of those, you know, Jacques Lemaire, Larry Robinson, Robbie Fatorik days of, like, Lou's guys. But they've got a team that I think can be competitive next year. So I don't think Lou's going to go with a young guy. The question I have, Michael, and this is, I think, a great question for you. When does Joel Quenneville allowed to come back into the league? Like, when is it not? Is it never? Because he hasn't been banned, and he may face a suspension if he gets hired again for what happened with the Chicago Blackhawks. But at what point does he become an option? Is it too soon now? A year removed? Does it have to be two? Because I don't think Lou's going to care. And if he thinks Joel Quenneville could be the right guy, I ask you, what's too long or too short a period of time for Quenneville to be back in the mix?
Well, I mean, it's a toxic hire, but the one person that could do it is Lamoriello. He doesn't care what you think. We talked about this earlier. He wouldn't give a reason why he fired a head coach, a really respected head coach. He said, I'd rather not talk about it. Amazing. And he got away with it because he's Lou Lamoriello. So He doesn't care if you go crazy. I don't know if the owners are sensitive.
I don't know.
There'll be protests outside the arena at Belmont. There would. I mean, this is a hot-button issue, but I would think if anybody could do it, Don, today, it would be Lou Lamoriello.
Yeah, I had a conversation today, and that's the exact same opinion that I have, that like if there's one guy that would do it and not care, and let's face it, you talk about toxic, right? It was toxic that Alex Ovechkin was a Putin guy when the war broke out. That lasted for a few weeks, and now it's all just about him scoring and the Capitals being up on the Florida Panthers. I mean, and we again, and Quinville's involvement in that scandal has still not really been pinpointed at all. Certainly deserving of losing his job and being out, but how long is not enough? And it's we're not that far removed from it, so I'm not sure it's an option. Mike Babcock is still out there as a possibility for a coach. There's so many options right now. It's just so new. But
there's no way that Lou would go for a torts, right? Because that would be a blast.
No, I mean, listen, he likes hiring American-born coaches, but no, that doesn't seem like something that would mix. I like John Tortorella. I think he deserves to be a coach in this league again. I just don't know if it would work with Lou. But, you know, stranger things have happened, right? Give Lou credit. I think he just wants to win. And if he thinks John gives him the best chance to win, he might hire him. I just don't think that mix works.
Peter, I believe this is probably stealing a story from ENN, but a lot of people don't know, but Barry Trotz and Kenny Albert were roommates when they were both in the minor leagues. And Kenny was so upset today, Peter, that he was scheduled to call a horseshoe contest, and he backed out. He backed out.
Never done that before.
Is that true?
Yeah, he's never given up an assignment, but he's so close to Barry that this rocked him. He got out of the horseshoe assignment.
It wasn't the horseshoe championship, though, was it?
No. I think it was the semis.
Then I usually play ping pong. I've been doing that for the last week or so.
Yeah. Here's the element that makes that story unbelievable. That Kenny couldn't do the horseshoe event. He'd fight through it.
Right. That's right. He still would have done it. That is the only thing.
Because because obviously his relationship with Torts is true, and I mean with Trotz is true, and that he would call horseshoes. I don't know, what do you call it? A match? A game? Like what do you call horseshoes?
Horseshoes.
Yeah. A game of horseshoes.
Yeah, I can't see Kenny and Torts being close. They're different people.
The only thing I know about horseshoes is, Don, you may remember the great song Everyday People by Arrested Development.
Sure.
And at the beginning they say, in a game of horseshoes, and that's why I believe it's a game. According to speech from Arrested Development, it is a game of horseshoes.
I got to ask Michael, though. Like you said that Torts and Kenny are too different.
Right.
Who's like Kenny?
Barry Trotz. Lived with him.
No. Yeah, they lived together.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't describe
them as... closest people can get.
No, but they might have been close, but I'm just saying...
I never lived with anybody
until Jody. Similar.
I'm just saying similar. I don't know anybody that's like Kenny.
He's one of a kind.
Yes.
He's
I mean,
great Kenny
compliment.
Albert.
But I never saw anybody say, but that guy reminds me of Kenny.
Kenny's great.
He is.
So I took one of Pete's ENN stories, but he's got plenty.
Don and I were speaking earlier. It was a crazy weekend of sports.
I know.
There's a lot to get to.
All right, we got to get to it because we got to get off at 6:30 with the pregame show. So
sure.
Coming up in just a moment, ENN with Peter Rosenberg, and we'll hang around as well right here on YES and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.